Good morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Wednesday, April 20th, and the time is 8:04. And now, at the Bethany Davis Committee Room in our office, we have all here in the table to know. Members of House Education present are Representative Mike Cross, Representative Ron Brewer, Representative Tiffany Zolkowski, Representative Ryder Hopkins. Our co-chair, Rick Drummond, is with us from our teams this morning, and then myself, co-chair, Rep. Andy Story. We have a forum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Today, I will vote recording temperatures are normal, and all the answers are available. Moderator, assisting with technical conferencing support. Thank you both. Today, we have two items on the agenda. First, the Rules Committee will take action on Hospital 413 Facilities Constituted a school, in particular, Purdue School. Following that, we'll have a first hearing on Senate Bill 111 Early Education and Intervention. First up, Hospital 413. We first heard this bill on April 6th, and then again on April 13th. In your packet, we'll find a follow-up document and answers to three questions about school quality levels. We received no amendments and amendments that were filed on Tuesday. That brings us to the bill before us, Representative Hopkins, for the motion.
Madam Chair, I move Hospital 413, version 32-LS1667-A from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Accompanying Fiscal Notes.
I will attend for purposes of discussion. Do any members have any final comments on this legislation before we take action on it? No, I think we've had some good discussion on it, so I'll remove my objection. Is there any objection to removing Hospital 413 from Committee? I see hearing none. We will now take three meetings to set the paperwork. So, Bill 111, the Alaska Reads Act. We are Senator Brittany and Senator Allen in the room today, and Senator Bay, thank you both. Would you please come forward, state your name for the record, and begin your presentation. Welcome to our presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Brittany, Senator Ryder, Alaska State Education Chair, Senator Biggins, District Senator, member of the Senate Education Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair, and House Education Committee for hearing Senate Bill 111. Senate Bill 111 is a bipartisan effort to improve reading skills through increased accountability, working resources, and by leveraging the modernization efforts we've already begun in the pandemic. This bill affirms that the Senate rises to this challenge and invests in the success of the program. Senate Bill 111 seeks to improve our student outcomes through several avenues. It calls for the Department of Education and Early Development to establish reading screening tools to identify students that are falling behind. The bill then directs school districts to provide international services to those students in need. I believe that this program, known as the nationally declined Read Down Line program, will provide real help to Alaskan students. In addition to the assistance provided to students, this act ensures that kids get the work to meet the challenge. The bill adds reading special positions that need to work directly with teachers across the state to improve the quality of reading instruction in Alaska. It also requires the Board of Education to establish training and testing requirements for teachers and others based reading instruction. Senate Bill 111 also creates a virtual education consortium managed by PE. Such a consortium is being under consideration even before the 2020 pandemic. But this timely effort will leverage the recent advancements in virtual learning. It will allow students that do well working remotely to continue to do so, and will modernize the way Alaska teachers access professional development courses across the state.
Madam Chair, for the record, Senator Biggins, District 2. One of the key components budget amendment from school districts to improve quality of early education programs by allowing districts to include students in high quality education programs, early education programs in the foundation formula. The bill also creates a target grant program for low performing districts that need to develop or improve early education programs. I will just add that there's a lot of discussion, a lot of work that you've been looking at similar legislation here in the body. And rather than repeat that, I will say that we have learned from what you have been doing here in the House Education Committee with HB 164 and allowed it to inform the final passage one of HB 111 for the work of the chairman of the other committees and the other two committees, the Finance Committee and the Education Committee, and all the members. We believe we've crafted this legislation that, as you know, the passage decided unanimously with the only amendment being the amendment I proposed to ensure that it's named the last word again, consistent with what we've been saying. In fact, I turned back to the chair of education, the expert there behind us, they're going to go through the section on, and again, back to you. But, Madam Commissioner, if there are any brief questions for us, as Senator Brady said, I think that we're prepared to turn over to staff for the essential analysis. Shows that there is an inconsistent approach to reading instruction, both associated with inadequate measures for quality control. Classes, students need focused, comprehensive reading legislation rather than science-based reading instruction and intervention for pre-K through third grade students. And this is exactly what SB 111 is aiming to accomplish, screening that statewide policy of consistency for our students. There are a few ways that the state is currently investing in early education, such as the public safety, the other component of the bill. The state does currently have grant and free grant programs. It's funded around $3 million per year in service, and it's about 1,400 students. The state also has Head Start programs that provide early education for about 989 4-year-olds in the state today. And then the DARTS Teachers Program, which is currently not compliant in statute, also provides services. And the bill is simply seeks to reinstitute that into the statute. The bill that's before the DARTS Bill was on the one level of the Committee of Public Sign Education Committee. And I would just point out that the bill before you is the product of the bill that has started debate over months of work with the education committee members and with the stakeholders to develop the piece of legislation that's included today. It's highly developed based on work that was previously done. So even though there was a lot of work done this year, there was a lot of work that was done before we started this endeavor on the Senate floor, but as well, looking through that legislative history, we found legislation dating back to 8 years ago that started this conversation. Just to highlight what the bill agreed does, it has three main components. The early education component, creating an expansion of the K-12 education system to include 4-year-olds in the K-12 program. It also includes evidence-based reading instruction requirements and interventions for essential children that need additional help. And the last component is a version consortium created by the bill to allow more efficient professional development and reading instruction throughout the state. And I'll turn it over to Ms.
stakeholder feedback from world leaders, advocates, and educators. Several of them were adopted to strengthen the cultural components of the legislation before you. One of the most significant amendments that was adopted was to strike all references to assessments and to ensure that there is no relationship to any reference or inference of a high stakes testing. We also struck the language around the reading screeners that are in the legislation to ensure that they are ultimately responsive and will be provided by deed and all designed by deed in any language. Additionally, there are stronger relationships for early learning coordination that has direct conversations with the district and their HSR programs if they have an access in that district. And one of the best amendments that was adopted as well is requiring additional training and indigenous language by the reading experts and reading specialists that will be headed to the district as part of the permanent intensive reading program. All the training for reading center programs were really student centered. These include expanding the definition of grant learning, so it is now Title IX. We also took that into the stakeholder group that I know the Council Strategic Committee discussed, expanding and including different experts and knowledge holders in that conversation, and moved that group to review the implementation of the entire bill as well as the document for this. Finally, there was a informed stipulation that I wanted to highlight. The bill is that we removed the cap for the number of low-performing schools that can participate in the permanent reading intervention program. One of the key pieces of legislation that's included in the last grant act is an idea to my legislative art, which is the permanent education component. This section really builds off locally successful programs as described in the Early Learning Coordination Report, which you should have a copy of the 2022 report in your packet. In this legislation, we expand successful pre-elementary grant programs to ensure that every district will have access to the same funds from the training support to grow a pre-K program or approve an existing pre-K program. These programs will qualify that their students will go into Indiana and have a student. Additional amendments that were made in the final, as I mentioned before, also ensured that there's strong coordination between existing higher education programs, and as Mr. King here indicated, it also qualifies the parents' teachers program, and that is only the same definition of parent learning.
Major section of the bill, the main intervention services, are a major component in the legislation that's before you. The main intervention services is really an effort to identify students who really need additional help learning how to read in the early grades, and then ensuring that they get the help that they need. We built really responsible reading screeners that are required by the bill that really had some kind of a test to decide whether a student could advance to the next grade or maybe it's simple to identify the needs of the student and ensure that they're getting that assistance. So the reading screeners that are within the bill that we'll talk about soon, they are required to be assessed up to 3 times. That is, if the student passes the assessment on the first or second time of the year, they don't have to take it for the rest of the year. But if they fail the assessment, if they don't pass the screener, on the first or second time that it's performed, then they will have this going doing the screening. And then this continuous screening is intended to make sure that the individual reading plan can be updated to provide the services that are necessary to meet that individual student's needs. These screening tools are developed by the Department of Education and also in the facility. There are these training tools that are developed statewide as the primary reading screen tool, and then there's also another component within additional $500,000 funding mechanism tied to it for the development of reading screener tools in other languages. The district can also have the ability to use or create their own screeners if they don't like the screeners that the department has provided. But I think one of the important part here is that these are ways that we can identify the students that need help and make sure that we create plans that are tailored to their needs. In addition to the reading intervention services and individual reading plans, the bill also directs the Department of Education to hire reading specialists that go out into the districts and help teachers learn how to conduct those interventions and how to teach reform science-based reading instruction. So these are positions paid for by the state to the Department of Education.
reconstruction and employment are also the dominant prominent features that are influencing these episodes. And I'd rather what these is that those professionals, those reading specialists who go out into these communities, they build up the local capacity so that that knowledge stays in our district and that we continue to invest in our primary students.
For the record, with the open staff center language, this bill also contains the occupational state support for virtual education. The pandemic has taught us quite a bit, and one of those things is that we need to ensure that our educators and students always have access to high quality education. So this bill really focuses on leveraging the gains and building up investments to ensure that for whatever the future holds, we are prepared. We apologize. With the Dermot Staff Design Advantage, the important aspects of Senate Bill 111 also for locally directed education. Our state is quite unique in responding to the heart of our communities, and the legislation really is about parent engagement and choice. But once an individual or student has been identified, they have some issues with reading, they struggle to be reading. They will have an individual reading plan provided to them because every student is unique, and the interventions that they will need will be unique to them and where they are on their reading trajectory. As part of that conversation that the teacher will be having with the student, they will also be having one with the parent and guardian. Once again, the expanded definition of parent guardian in legislation states simply that it's an adult who is in charge of that student's academic career. So it's not necessarily a biological parent, it could be a step parent, it could be a grandparent, it could be a foster parent, or it could simply be an aunt or uncle or another individual in that community who's there for that child. But in this legislation, we really focus on codifying Alaska Statute 14.03.016. And that statute simply states that the parent has complete control of the direction of their student's education. They can opt out of any screener, they can opt out of any assessment, they can opt out of any classroom or curriculum. This legislation is simply reinforces that the statute because it is always a parent's choice. At no point is there one right decision when they hear the student's education for doing this bill. There are multiple ways to answer and multiple conversations that will happen over the year. And if and when a child's decision on prevention is incurred, the parent will be at the forefront of that conversation. As Senator, as Commissioner Duncan has mentioned multiple times, this is not a retention bill. This bill is about early interventions. We know early interventions work. We know that retention is important. The focus of this legislation is on reading interventions that are student informed and also directed by the parent.
Sunset provision was just to give a little bit more of a piece of mind and some accountability for members of the other body. The idea is that these are new programs and there's a desire to have an assurance that these programs are working before they continue to be funded. And so the idea within the bill is that it requires annual reports to the legislature and it requires analysis throughout the process. Culminating in a larger report in 2020-2038 legislature before the sunset provisions come in with recommendations to the legislature about which programs are working and which are not. And that way, those programs that are working can be extended and those that are not can be revisited. The idea is that provides accountability and any school district that wants to continue these programs needs to ensure that they are working and can provide the data and evidence that suggests that practice standard so that the legislature can actually continue those programs. The last few slides, Madam Chair, are here to try to correct some cases for some of the questions that can come up. So this question about how the students that rolled into the ADM over time, the bill has $83 million per year coming from it for ADM inclusion, and so that's why we see this visual sum upward. The kind of trend on the block is it represents the 1,400 or so students that are currently in the 4-year-old pre-K program in the district. The Head Start program is in blue, and we just have to cut throughout. It's an assumption that
much harder it would be harder to make a different assumption than that, just given the constraints and eligibility requirements of that SAR program. And what you're saying is that there are two opportunities for districts to get funding for their 4-year-olds. One is through getting the program approved directly through the Department of Ed, including the students in Indiana. And so the assumption here is that the current program students would be eligible to be enrolled into the Indiana immediately. For districts that do not have a program, there is a grant that's available to those school districts to create a program. And so this will give them a 3-year grant in order to get that program approved and enroll those students into the ADM. And on the far right, you see, starting in 2032 through 2033, you can see that the eligibility grants program tends to lock. That's what happened in that the approach that is like universal. This is when all of the districts have had an opportunity to include their programs into their ADM. And then the last is the education funding that's tied to this bill, and so you can see how it has gone over time. This was the rationale for the $300 premium finance so that the budget impact is spread out over time. And so you can see that the growth trajectory of the education funding continues until all of the students are included in the ADM. And with that, we can move to the section on analysis.
All right, once again, Lukey Cooper, staff at Harvard Beach. I'll be reading a sectional analysis of the CBS for Senate Bill 111 highlights. This is version R-RPA. So Section 1 of the legislation establishes this act as the Alaska Reads Act. Section 2 is related to e-invention requirements, and the section amends it directly to current law. This section directs the State Board of Education to determine age-appropriate day session standards for early learning education and kindergarten programs. Section 3, which is on page 2, amends Alaska Statute 14.03.060, and this is related to the definition of that early elementary school program. In this section, terminology is updated. It also shows that the department has the authority to approve or supervise early education programs, and it clarifies the relationship with transfer agencies and the Department of Education and Early Development. It also removes any language regarding the ADM count as addressed in the other sections of the bill. Section 4, also on page 2, as well as the section 14.03.060 is a repeal section. The changes made in the above Section 3 will be repealed on June 30th, 2034. Just to note for the committee, there are multiple repealer sections in this legislation, so you'll be hearing us talk about them. Moving on to Section 5, which goes between pages 2 and 3, this amends Alaska Statute 14.03.072, and this directs each school district to provide information related to the importance of early learning. Section 6 is a repealer section of the above sections that repealed any changes on June 30th, 2034.
Madam Chair, it's actually something that the bill picks up in case 203 has remained related to the required requirements of the Department of Education. And this section adds required requirements for ratios of administrative employees to students and administrative employees to teachers and teacher-student ratios. It also requires that these reports be made available to the school district, and it expands the reporting requirements and it will write all of the reports in this section in 403.120. It also adds a progress report for the intervention services that we spoke of earlier. It also adds a report of the effectiveness of the parents as teachers program established in Section 14. Section 8 then reverses those changes in 2034 on the sunset provisions taken. Section 9 of the bill adds two subsections to that same statute, the same section for the intervention. And these are related, these are reports. Requires that the report be posted online, and it also defines an administrative employee. Section 10 of the bill is related to under-school openings, children entering public school, and it amends the Section 14.3 by limiting participation to 4- and 5-year-olds in a program that is trying in an early education program does not need to move to kindergarten age, as was just stated, and this unit came up as lead to Section 11 reverses the change in the previous section in 2034. Section 12 reinstitutes when this is an existing law. It's currently in 13300 with different amendments, but as the Section 10 amendments come, quick clarification. So when the repealer provisions are providing, it comes back into law in its current form. Section 13 of the bill adds two subsections to the reporting requirements of the Department of Health, to the district reporting requirements. Subsection H establishes an annual report for student performance metrics in paper through their grade, and subsection I improves the public access to data collected under this section.
Lookie Tobin's Office of Analytics. We are now on page 8. We're talking about Article 4, Early Education, Section 14. Section 14 establishes an early education grant program that directs DEET to provide assistance in training districts to develop or improve the high-quality pre-K programs. The department will award 3-year grants plus 2 years of remedial grants anything by the department. This section also provides an opportunity for a teacher when the districts are prioritized grant funding for lower-ranked districts. It also will require DEET to approve a program to meet high-quality standards for NAM inclusion. It makes clear that the rules are subject to appropriation. However, at a minimum, there is a 3-year allocated fund to $3 million appropriation for the support of the grant program. Additionally, amendments made to the finance, as indicated before, strengthen the requirement that districts consult with the Head Start program and document their consultation. This section also provides definition and grant classifier as teachers' programs. Moving on to section 15, which starts on page 11, this amendment section AS14.07.020 as relating to the duties of the Department of Education and Early Development. This section adds supervision or approval of early education programs. It also adds support and amendments and requirements related to the intervention program from section 32. And it also requires an email from the other stakeholders to evaluate the effectiveness of programs under this bill and review regulation. Please note that Senate Finance amended the Senate Bill SB 111 from Senate Education to include language that was adopted here in the House Education Committee relating to this annual meeting, and move this annual meeting from just solely focused on the written portions of the legislation to a title-wide evaluation. Section 16 refers to all the changes made in Section 15 in 2034.
Section 17 is an important change to the change of reference from pre-elementary school to early education programs throughout the bill. Section 18 is related to our selection of textbooks, and this is to incorporate the new sentence 1430-7 which were forthcoming under Section 23 of the bill. And then Section 19 reverses the changes in 2034. Section 20 directs the Department of Education's Department of the Board of Education to establish the standards for high quality early education programs. Section 21 is a new paragraph, 14.07.16, related to the annual report of the State Board, which requires the inclusion of a review of the effectiveness of the virtual consortium under the Section 34 of the bill. Section 22 reverses the changes in the previous section of 2034. Section 23 amends 14.07.180 related to the district curricula by requiring the board to utilize the components of evidence-based reading instruction. And then Section 24 is related to cooperative agreements. This expands the program to allow the district to form agreements with private businesses, nonprofits, and government agencies. Section 25 is related to the funding mechanism. This allows districts to count early education students who approve programs as one half of the median. It also prohibits the inclusion of early education students that are participating in other state or federal funding programs. And it provides a process for limiting the budget increase related to including new early education students in the median column so that it cannot result in more than $3 million increase per year. And then Section 26 sunsets the inclusion of the early education students in the median.
Thank you, Toby. Status on your package. We are on page 21, starting on Section 27. This section amends Lawsuit Statute 14.17.905. This is relating to the definition of school and popular control sense factors, and it includes the definition of early elementary school, tertiary inclusion of early education students. Section 28 reverses those stages after the sunset, which will kick in 2034. Section 29 on page 22 amends Lawsuit Statute 14.20.015, and this is related to primary teacher certificates. This adds a requirement that teachers receive training or complete coursework or receive additional instruction in evidence-based learning instruction. Section 30 reverses those changes in 2034. Section 31 on page 23. So we're on page 23 on section 31. This is related to teacher certificates and requires the state board to periodically review and evaluate acceptable levels demonstrated confidence in the issuance of the teaching certificate. Section 32, that's a new subsection. This is relating to preliminary teaching certificates for out-of-state teachers, and it ensures that there is mirroring of that completed board work or coursework or training for evidence-based learning instruction.
Section 32 of the bill is the long section of new sections of law. It includes several new sections, including 14.38760, which directs the Department of Education to establish standards for reading tools and identify students with reading deficiencies, and also establishes a timeline in which those screenings should be conducted. This is where the change from screening tool versus the accepted screening tool can be followed throughout the section. I'd also point out that in the section, the reference to the e-language was an important change that was made in Senate findings. It also creates 14.37.65 subsection A, which directs school districts to offer intensive reading and origin services to kindergarten through third grade students that are exhibiting a reading deficiency. It also requires communication with parents and any broad definition of parents that the student talked about. Subsection B directs the school districts to provide individual reading improvement plans for kindergarten through third grade students. Subsection C requires districts to notify student's parents that their child has demonstrated a reading deficiency, along with corresponding information regarding that deficiency. Subsection B requires a parent-teacher conference from kindergarten to second grade students to display a reading deficiency on their school assessment or screening to discuss whether a delayed progression is a good intervention for that individual student. Subsection E establishes a CWIP policy that determines if a student is ready for promotion to the fourth grade. Subsection F is specific to third graders, where it requires a parent-teacher conference for those third grade students that are exhibiting a reading deficiency on the screen assessment, and again to have the conversation with the parent whether that child is ready to advance to the next grade. Well, if the parent would like the child to advance to the fourth grade, the requires that the parent acknowledge the deficiency and make some commitment that they will do some additional intervention during the summer. Subsection B, establishes the best interest consideration for those who are situations who are vulnerable and is unavailable and a superintendent or their discipline principal or a teacher, for example, has to make the decision on whether their child is ready for the next grade or not. Section H provides an opportunity for a parent who doesn't participate in that decision to basically appeal the decision of that superintendent or designee. Subsection I directs the district to provide additional intervention services for students that make a waiver or do not promote. Subsection J directs the district to provide a path for mid-year promotion if the child is not promoted with their peers. And then subsection K establishes a policy for mid-year promotion of two third grade students that don't progress. Subsection L requires a student promoting mid-year to continue their individual reading improvement plan. Subsection M limits the retention or the progression of a superintendent to just 1 year. Subsection N provides a definition for reading teacher. New section 14.37.70 directs the department to establish a key reading program, including department funded reading specialists to assist school districts in setting up their intervention services and coaching teachers on how to conduct guidance based reading instruction. I'm trying to point out that there was a change in SAC financiers as well, whether they're referencing and then perhaps the department can utilize those leftover expressions as appropriate. New section 14.775 requires the department to adopt a definition of this slope scale. The definition was complicated, but I'm off the table to include in the statute and other references that the department created that definition and regulation. And it's
16 establishes the personal education consortium under this legislation. The consortium will allow for districts to offer virtual access to the courses of professional development across the state and hosted by the Department of Education. It also creates a reading specialist position that will be required to help districts improve their reading instruction. Section 35 also provides title-wide definitions of cultural responsiveness. Section 36, which is on page 38, adds early education programs to the definition of organization to ensure that early education educators are mandatory reporters. Section 37 of this legislation repeals Alaska Statute 34.03.080 as an informing change, and it also repeals Alaska Statute 14.03.290 to conform to the definition of parent and guardian as the outline. Definition. Section 38, which starts on page 38, are all the sunset provisions which repeal these sections on June 30th, 2034. I'm not going to read all of these statutes, but they are all the ones that we've been talking about throughout this legislation. Section 39, which starts on page 39, sets a deadline for the Department of Education to complete the setup of the virtual education consortium by June 1st, 2024. That is in recognition that the department currently is using COVID relief funds to help us with our virtual education offerings across the state. Section 40 is applicability language, and this is related to the grading instruction requirement, so that teachers with existing teaching certificates have time to meet the new requirements under this legislation. Section 41 on page 39 requires a report from the state legislature on the effectiveness of the programs created under this bill by the 38th legislature. And this will allow the legislature to consider some of the programs during the sunset. Please note that all of the information gathered in the annual meeting will be included in those recommendations. Section 42, which is on page 40, is transition language, and this directs you on how to use the PSA inclusion of the current operating early education students and what that should occur. Section 43 is transition language, which will allow the division writing regulation as this bill takes effect. Section 44 provides an immediate effective date of Section 43, which gives the authority of the department to draft this regulation. Section 45 provides effective dates for the sections of this bill that would be acted if the sunset provisions were allowed to reach conclusion. Section 46 provides an effective date of this legislation as July 1st, 2020. 2023 for early sections, and this is a recognition that we're quite deep in here and even taking some time to begin the process. With that, we conclude this section on analysis. Thank you for that. Are you going to be with us all at this time?
Good morning. For the record, I'm Chris Nair, Director of Finance and Sports Services and Prohibition Nation Board of Development. And there are five fiscal years before you this morning, so I'll be 111, and I will walk through each of them. So, quickly, we'll start with the fiscal note for the regulated board of the coordination. This is LMD component number 2912. just as a measure of the costs and issues associated with operating an early education grant program, as well as providing the training and support to the grantees. It's estimated that it would require 3 staff members to operate this program and provide that training and support. In addition to the salary and benefit costs, there are department transfer costs of $10,600 per position and write-back costs of $9,000 per position for supplies and equipment. As an assistant board of commission early development, we need to adopt regulations establishing the standards for the early education program. There's an additional one-time cost of $6,000 reflected in the fiscal month for legal services associated with developing those regulations. The total estimated fiscal year 2023 cost is $8,303,300, with $385,600 being the request for appropriation and $474,700 of parents and teachers' appropriation that is already included in the governor's fiscal year 2023 budget. The next fiscal amount I will suggest is the pre-kindergarten grant. This is going to be component number 3028. This fiscal year shows the costs associated with the early education program grants. Page 3 of the fiscal year provides a budget breakdown by fiscal year for the community grant program. As the bill says, the $3 billion annual cap on the program, 638, is the maximum number of students eligible for the program based on a half count average. Per student cost of $40,750. Table 3 provides the committee with a look at which cohorts would be eligible for the program and which they will be using the program. Table 4 is the visual representation of how many cohorts would transition to the foundation formula after the completion of this 3-year grant program. Fiscal year 2034 would be the last year of the 3-year grant program. And the total grant program would have costing approximately $33 million. For the purposes of the fiscal grant for the committee, we assume that all of the programs that go through the 3-year grant program get approval from the state board at the completion of that and don't need any additional time through that process.
So, clarifying question. So,
Madam Chair, we're going to look at that in the next 2 fiscal months.
Thank you.
So the next 2 I will address about the addition of the 4-year-olds to the foundation formula. So the first fiscal year, the foundation program, which is going to be component number 141, there's no cost shown on this fiscal note as the funding mechanism for this program is a general fund transfer in the public education fund, not into the foundation funding component. So this fiscal note is just shown as for explanation purposes only. You will see the costs associated with the fund capitalization fiscal note for the public education fund. That's going to be component number 2804. The fiscal note takes the total amount of the projected state aid and divides it by the total average daily membership to come up with an average cost per year. The bill funds the student at 1/5 of the average, so that's the $4,782 that's estimated. And this is based on our fiscal year 22 data as of December 21st, 2021. This is an average cost. For the actual counts, as they run through the formula, districts could receive a little bit more. There will be 9 cohorts of students going through the early education grant program. The first cohort will transition into the foundation formula in fiscal year 2027. The fiscal note assumes, as I said, that all programs that are developed in the first cohort will approve and will approve that transition at the end of the 3-year grant, and this assumption is carried out for all of the cohorts. The bill includes transition language for districts with existing early education programs that be approved by the State Board of Education, but limits that amount available for distribution in fiscal year 23 to $3 million, while in subsequent years it would be not more than a $3 million increase over the prior year. So once all students have transitioned and are included in the ADM gap, state aid is estimated to decrease approximately $24 million. this one I want to speak to Walter is the Australian Film Student for Children. This is going to be company number 2796. This is going to report for us associated with the Comprehensive Reading Intervention Program, the School of Urban Literacy, and the Virtual Education Consortium. Also, we're using the student understanding costs associated with these. So through the Comprehensive Reading Intervention Program, the Department will manage and operate the program and provide direct coursework, training, and testing opportunities related to evidence-based reading instruction. Annually, Sylvan Center convenes stakeholders to receive feedback on program implementation, establish a recognition program, and provide direct support and training for all these three teachers on the use of the theme of screening tool results in all the things of reading. It's estimated that it requires three staff members to manually operate this program. The education ministry and free position would be required to participate and present at student-led conferences. Professional development, the department expects virtual participation at the conferences, so we'll be budgeted for not in-person travel. That's for the end of the school day. In addition to the salary of the costs of the three positions, there is department attachment costs of $10,600 per position and one-time costs of $5,000 per position for salaries and supplies and equipment. In addition, the Comprehensive Reading Intervention Program requires the adoption and administration of a statewide screening tool to identify students in grade 3 with reading deficiency. There are approximately 40,000 students in grade 3 in the Alaska schools, and a statewide screener would cost approximately $15 per student, and this would result in an annual cost of about $600,000. The department will use federal receipts to cover the screener in fiscal year 23, so this cost would start as a general fund cost in fiscal year 24. In addition, there's a $500,000 cost would be needed in order to develop a screening tool for use of regional bilingual programs as an alternate screening tool to meet the culturally relevant needs starting in fiscal year 2024. There's also a one-time cost of $18,000 reflecting the fiscal code for the legal services associated with adopting regulations to implement this program. And as we said, we're going to discuss this in the program as we're going to do the 30th, 2034. Next, we have the school's improvement reading program. The department will provide direct support and intervention in district and reading and school reading programs. Each year, the department will determine how many schools may be adequately served by the reading specialists, and will select those schools from the lower 25% of schools to participate in the reading program. The department anticipates employing from 1 to 5 reading specialists in year 1, and 5 in the subsequent years. The fiscal year will have hiring 5 in year 1, and that year count out years will be adjusted based on implementation of the program. There are department charge by costs of $10,600 per position and one-time cost of $5,000 for supplies and equipment, as well as a one-time cost of $12,000 for the legal services associated with developing the ranks of the program. The department expects the virtual participation at statewide conferences, so we have voted for one in-person travel. Also reflected in the fiscal year is the cost associated with the purchase of supplemental reading textbooks and materials for school districts in connection with the reading intervention services. The cost per student when adopting a new reading curriculum is $250. There's approximately 10,000 students in grade level, per grade level, in Alaska schools. So with approximately 40,000 students in kindergarten through third grade, to come up with this estimated cost, we looked at the 2019-2020 school year. We have 391 schools, 33 students, and taking those 40,000 students divided by the 391 schools, 102 33 students per school on average. So taking the 5 schools per year times 102 students, 33 students per school. And $250 per student, we get a cost of $127,500. And finally, there is an annual
student association representative. Representative.
ensure that voice will hold up. So please let Ms. Teschner finish the fiscal notes, and then when we go into general questions, I would like to ask questions.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. Please proceed, Ms. Teschner. You're awesome. And finally, related to this program, there is an annual contract fee of $50,000 beginning in fiscal year 2023 for independent contractors to establish and collect the baseline data needed in order to conduct the data analysis of the program's effectiveness for the final report that's due to the 38th legislature. And again, this program is repealed June 30th, 2034. The next program under this fiscal note is the Virtual Education Consortium that is established in the department in cooperation with school districts. The department would need two positions to manage and operate the same virtual education and learning management system and LMS. Review task courses and professional development provide that virtual education and virtual instruction training. In addition, there would be in reading personnel's position to provide intervention reading, intensive reading intervention services to districts participating in the virtual education consortium. The department established a statewide virtual education learning management system license for districts, teachers, and students in fiscal year 2021 in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and plans to continue the license through fiscal year 2023 using our federal COVID-19 relief funding at an annual cost of $1,060,600. The two permanent full-time positions needed to manage the learning management system will be, of course, to work on professional development and provide the virtual instruction training as outlined in the bill as the one-time reading specialist position could also be funded for fiscal year 23 with our federal COVID-19 funding. So starting in fiscal year 2024, state funds will be needed in order to support the learning management system and its associated positions. And in 2023, there's also a time increment of $12,000 included for the services associated with developing regulations around the virtual education consortium, and this program is repealed on June 30th, 2034. There are two additional costs associated reflected in the schedule note, not directly reflected to these programs, but overall cost. There's a $200,000 in fiscal year 2032 for an independent contractor to assist the department in compiling and evaluating the required multi-year data analysis. And then there's a $115,000 cost starting in fiscal year 2024 for costs associated with the annual convening with the panel to review and comment on the effectiveness of the 4-year programs. The fiscal year 23 general fund costs to implement these programs overall for this fiscal year is $4,187,400. And I would show that this is a presentation on the fiscal notes. I'll be doing this for the first time. And I am assuming that we will be here for questions if you need more. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for all of your presentations. I will now start with questions, and I will start with your hosting panel, Representative Berman. I'll begin first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you really well. Thank you.
Okay, great. I'm juggling various pieces of paper and the speakerphone at the same time, so I appreciate your indulgence. I really appreciate this most excellent presentation by both of the Senate bill sponsors and the Senate bill sponsor staff. This is delighted that SB 111 has made it into our committee. And I see you have really addressed the concerns of the House Education Committee in your consideration of all of the changes that we have made to House Bill 164, so I really appreciate that. Going back to the PowerPoint presentation, on page 3, Mr. Kale looked through the numbers of students in the Head Start and the pre-K programs. I think those were clarified in the big graph at the end
Education to staff committee, so I will be looking for him. I would direct folks to the Early Learning Foundation report that is in our packet dated for 2022. This does outline all of the different individuals who are entering these programs. I apologize, I don't have it up in front of me. It should be in your packet. If you look to the graph that is at the end of the slide deck, it is a visual representation of the current participation in these different programs. Right now, Head Start has approximately 900 students. There are eligibility requirements. There are eligibility requirements that do prohibit additional students from participating in a program designed to activate their students. Additionally, we have a little over 1,400 students currently enrolled in a pre-K program in the existing district. This is part of the statewide pre-elementary grant program, and that is included in our early education coordination report 2022. And then the two additional graphs that we have on page 12, the orange and green, showcases if this bill was implemented, those would be the additional students that would be served under this piece of legislation. As Heidi Tefstra indicated from the department, there are approximately 10,000 students per grade. And so we would have built because it is a voluntary program, meaning that parents are not, it's not compulsory that students attend a pre-elementary program. We believe there would probably be somewhere around 88% participation from the statewide community of parents.
Thank you, Ms. Tobin. You actually addressed the next question I had about that graph, and that was, from what I can tell on the graph, approximately 80% participation in statewide pre-K and Head Start, leaving about 20% to 25% in, assuming in private preschool at that point.
Okay, right.
Thank you. You anticipated my question, so dump that one. On page 5 of the presentation, I appreciate that you struck all references to assessments. I know we are going to have members asking questions about accountability and how do we get there without assessments. If you could just briefly address how that works when you strike assessments and replace them with screeners.
For the record, Nikki Tobin's left to center baggage. There was multiple stakeholder conversations and discussions about the intent of this legislation, particularly the reading components. Much of the work that's done in the reading section is informed by the Dyslexia Task Force that I believe you yourself are bound to co-chair. That really helped us understand that what we're looking to do is help students succeed. And so understanding that this goal is not to compete at a national level or not to have any student be assessed on any sort of high-stakes standardized testing, it's really to help inform the classroom teacher understand what the resources are. There's some great materials that actually came from education that helped us understand more about culturally responsive screeners, culturally responsive assessments, and that language was discussed and adopted in Senate Finance. With that, we're now looking at ensuring that the classroom teacher has a formative analysis of how to ensure that their students are on the right trajectory to be able to learn to read. There is no statement that says these students have to be proficient, they need to be meeting minimal benchmarks to ensure that they're on the right trajectory, and that is at the purview and discretion of the classroom teacher to understand what their student is accomplishing and where they might have deficiencies and help inform a cohesive plan to ensure that students are on the right path forward. So in terms of having accountability, this is really about the conversation with the parent and the in-classroom teacher to ensure that everyone receives that same basic level of learning care when it comes to learning to read. But it's not about necessarily accountability on a larger national scale that we're trying to hit some national benchmark. We believe that if we do these interventions and we do them well and we provide support for our educators and our families, that we will achieve all expectations and just naturally pass any of those national assessments that we seem to be lagging on.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. On page 10 of the presentation, appreciate you changing retention to promotion as we did in higher education, and that the parent has complete control. There is still some concern among onlookers that this is not a retention bill. Can you ease our concerns about the presence of retention in this bill?
Thank you for that question. Representative Brown, it would be honest to me if we could go to the section that has all the language about starting about the progression of your deciding about the progress. That would help me. Looking at this outside of image, I believe those sections start on page 29 of the latest, usually page 28 of the presentation, starting on line 13.
Senator Dickens, I want to address that question directly. The issue of progression is something that occurs on down every district, as I mentioned to the committee before, and was interrupted. Every district right now has a policy that provides the superintendent the opportunity to either progress or not progress a student based on the recommendation of the principal or the teacher. Those policies actually differ. What the Senate version of the legislation does is it sets out parameters for when one would have that discussion and places that final decision in the hands of the parent in that broader definition that Ms. Jobin mentioned earlier and Ms. Tate mentioned earlier. That broader definition is one that we do also adopted here for the other useful legislation. That broader definition includes on goals, guardians, person responsible for education. The only element left in the hands, if you will, of the superintendent in this decision is taken out of the hands of the parent, as if the parent is simply not responsible after multiple contacts. And yet we still provide a provision for the parent to appeal that decision should that decision be made by the superintendent. And the parent up here on the scene, they could then appeal that decision. The issue of progression is also informed by three outright prohibitions on progression beyond retention in the bill. The first of those is if the student is an English language, second language learner. So, for example, if English is not the first language, the bill actually prohibits retention, which is not the case today in state law. Number two, if the student is suffering a disability, learning disability, that is also a condition that would be prohibited to retain that child under the second version of this bill. And that's not the case today. Today, you could be held back regardless of whether you were or weren't, whether you had a kid or didn't have a learning disability, or whether you're able to go. And the third reason, the third area, is that if you've already been retained, this bill would prohibit you being retained again in first, anyone to first through fourth grade. And I say that because right now that prohibition doesn't exist. You could be held back multiple times under current law. So this bill actually goes the opposite direction of being a mandatory retention bill. It actually moves to prohibiting retention on three very specific grounds and further puts that decision, that final promotion decision, in the hands of the parent, a fully informed parent who's had the opportunity of working with a teacher who's developed a reading plan based on the screenings at the beginning and not the end of the year, which is what we do with our screening mostly now, it's at the end of the year. So you have the opportunity of a full year's worth of improvement, a fully informed parent in that process in high school, and not an arbitrary holding back the child who may be struggling because the English is not their first language, who may be struggling because of a learning disability, or who may have struggled in the past. So it really moves in very much the opposite direction of what sometimes out there in the world people have assumed about this bill. I would like to answer your question, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Begich. It does indeed, but I really appreciate that careful explanation and also the consideration of the needs of families. The I also notice there's a section that refers to a child in preschool does not necessarily have to move to kindergarten at age 5. I see potentially a place where a child could be essentially retained in preschool before moving into kindergarten in order to be totally prepared to learn. Do you see what I
didn't
see in that section?
Looking up the staff, as I recommended from the record, through the chair, Chair Drummond, yes, those provisions were included as we had multiple conversations at Senate Education that talked about how this needs to be parental or parent informed. There is a sense where a parent may not want their child to progress in natural progression, where it's almost mandatory that you complete one learning and you move to the next, and there's no opportunity for a parent to say, maybe I don't necessarily think that my 4-year-old is ready to enter into kindergarten, or my 5-year-old is ready to enter into kindergarten. I'd like them to have an additional year of preschool. This simply provides an opportunity for the district to be able to provide an additional year in the request of the parent. It is not meant to be a provision that is exercised by the request for necessarily a superintendent or the superintendent's need to arbitrarily retain a child. Again, we hope that there is continued conversations with all of the educators in the room to talk about what's the best need to get students if everything is getting into place.
Okay, thank you. Now to step it up a little bit so I don't completely dominate the question asking. In the sectional analysis on page 4, section 27 regarding defining an elementary school in a district between 101 and 425 students, I may be confusing the size of an elementary school with the size of the district here. Can you explain what that means? Is that a district like Hooper Bay, for example, or the Hooper Bay School, that has 425 students approximately in their K-12 school, or is this just an elementary school that contains between 101 and 425 students?
The record is set in minutes to the computer. I'm going to ask for a lifeline on that. I believe that the language came from the department, so I think it must get a definition to that. I'm looking back to find details and I'm going to ask you right on board if you would please. If that's okay, Madam Chair.
I believe so. Thank you. And could you tell me the page number on that? Or, so,
page
21 to 22,
I believe, is the text. And the actual language is on page 22, beginning on 6. So that is exactly what it's doing. And so, like,
certain education or even by the Department of Banking. So you can get the school bonds in November 2017 precisely to ensure that the ADM count would be counted toward the school population for those students enrolled in a one-half an ADM because they're not otherwise included in the education program that wasn't included. That's what I understand. And there's a correction to that. Yeah, I believe you nailed it, though, Madam Chair, that this is related to specific area count and some due diligence is warranted.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bogich, for keeping an eye on this and that target. Section 33 of the sectional, where the parent establishes a parental waiver in halfway down the page, a parental waiver is established to allow a student to advance to fourth grade without being prepared, and which requires an additional 20 hours of summer intervention services. I understand that the parent is to agree to that, and what if that doesn't happen? What if the parent really falls down on the job and does not make sure that their child gets that 20 hours of summer intervention services?
Looking at this after I looked up through the chair, Chair Drummond, she's looking through a page drawing on page 30, and it's starting on line 30 down to line 19. This provision was inserted in this legislation at the request of the Senate Education Committee. You know, there is a Senator Hughes, who's really better than a parent, who's going to ask their child to get progressed, knowing that their child is not prepared to enter the next grade, that the parent commit, the parent ensure that student will receive additional interventions over the summer. And our bill speaks to this legislation to ensure or guarantee or direct the parent. It is a safe conversation to happen, that the understanding is that the parent will provide those additional services or reach out to additional resources. And I know that the schools and the school staff have been really excited and interested in having a deeper conversation around how this might look like, but one of the pieces I do want to direct the committee to that I hope will ensure that the parent has those resources and information they need to provide those additional services is on page 3, starting on line 3, where a parent will receive additional information and list of resources and organizations that will help with their student and help with their own literacy. So hopefully in those several months where that parent is providing to their training, they'll have the resources at hand through those parenting conferences to know what they can offer the job. But once again, there's nothing that guarantees or ensures that the parent will do this other than their commitment and their notification and signature of the suitcase that they are committing to that option.
The idea that the state would force a parent to be direct and then a child is something that was directly repugnant to the committee. We believed if the conversation is not ongoing between the parent and the teacher, and that has led to this final decision by the parent to go ahead and progress the child into such an agreement, and then the parent chooses not to follow through an agreement, the suffering of the child in that regard. And we choose to believe that the dialogue that the bill implies between the teacher and the parent will lead the parent to take that responsible role. There was no coercive action. I can imagine that you could press onto a parent if they chose to advance their child without any hearing deficiency and then chose not to support that child. I think that it would be difficult to force a parent to, it would be in a difficult position to force a parent to do that. I can't imagine what that would look like, but I hope that this helps answer the question.
Thank you, Senator.
And thank you, Representative. I'm going to open it up for questions, and then I think you've certainly been talking with others, have an opportunity to ask. kinds of questions. So thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tiffany Clark, Representative House, can you please? Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Ms. Nicholas Bumpton on the bill, since the Commission Chair was not here. You'd indicated that right now retention policies occur at every district. I've actually heard that that's not a factual statement, or that, for example, does not have a retention policy because they're concerned that short-term gains can have longer-term harms for their students. So if this is the other retention bill, can you speak to why it's in the bill at all?
Thank you, Senator. Senator, thank you for the record. Every district retains the ability or has the ability to retain a child, whether they have a family policy or they have the capacity to retain a child. Every district has that. In this case, you can confirm that. Whether or not we choose to statutize that or not is our office choice. I would tell you that the evidence shows that retention at best is a last resort, and that exact data shows that retention has very little impact whatsoever on a child's ability to learn or read. Why this bill is a retention bill is because it very strictly states that there are reasons that you cannot retain a child. It goes in the opposite direction, which is, I think, about, 10 minutes ago, of any of those, because the opportunity is to hold a child back. Further, the parent makes the decision in the final run. The parent decides, and the parent will make that decision today. This is a parent that excludes themselves from having to participate in any testing or any assessment today on the statute that is provided. The parent is provided the opportunity here to control any decision that may be made prematurely or otherwise by the local district about their child if they choose to exercise that. This is not a retention bill. This is a bill that says there are five basic components of reading that are the scientific-based components of IRS language and behavior that help a child acquire the skill of reading. It says that there is early education as an opportunity to ensure that you're prepared to learn. If the bill does suggest that if you do these things collectively and collaboratively, your child is likely to learn to read and learn to read well. So it's not a retention bill, and I appreciate the question, but it is a bill that, in fact, places restrictions on the ability of the district to pay. Okay. I hope that that answers your question.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate in the presentation overview this morning that on slide 5, I believe it was under the indication that the removal of the term assessment was with the intention of stepping away from the function, if you will, of retention, being considered a retention tool, but regardless of the term that's used with respect to a fifth and first grader, and that there's no seeking, if you will, potentially the function, I'm not going to refer to the one of them, of the screener tool does lead to a high seeking. So I'd be interested if this is not a retention bill or looking to function similar to strategies, if you will, similar to maybe a fine order is a high-stakes decision point in a child's educational journey. I'm interested to understand how this could look differently, what function, how this could be strategies have been considered to ensure that it doesn't
chair. Senior chair represents Wisconsin. Could you tell me where you see that topic in the legislation? As I drafted the legislation to work with others in doing this, how many is that education could be drafted this legislation, particularly in terms of the screener? That screener is similar to the screener used for all districts today, and that screener is planned at the end of the year. This is simply says that the screening tool that will exist in most districts now, or a screening tool that could be developed in conjunction with a local district by the department, or in a screening tool that might be just developed by the local district, that's evidence based, it would be the screener at the beginning. It's an observational screening where you look to see if a child is struggling with learning. You work with the parent and the child to develop a plan for how you would address that. You assess yourself, assess the child with the parent by doing a consent screener somewhere during the middle of the year to see if there's progress being made with that, and it then retool. At that point, if there's not progress being made, that would lead to obviously doing a retool of the plan. If there is progress being made in the child, if there is feeling very well, and again, this is an observational screen, it's not a test. The screener is not being together to test. If I'm allowed to a teacher trusting this skill as a reading teacher, a skill that will be supported by the department, then having the opportunity, if that child is showing progress, there wouldn't be a third skill, there wouldn't be a need for one. However, if there was still a need for a third skill, instead of waiting a preview now to the end of the year to do that first screen, you would have had two opportunities to be already working with the parent and the child to develop the skills of reading. If at the end of that process the child has not shown progressed sufficiently, the teacher's goal isn't to say, okay, you're done. It's to say that that parent to talk about the various options that are available. It's not on this screen. It's an opportunity to inform the parent, engage the parent in a learning opportunity, and the parent has the decision on what they make to move the child further on or not. That's, so I'm confused by where it created a high-stake structural situation for that child that is any different than a high-stake situation that might be faced by the I'm not sure where in the bill that does that.
Thank you for that question. I think I can point to a couple people, places right now in virtual asking and ask me if that's what she's thinking of. But I just wanted to say that I think, you know, right now, at least I know most of my, you know, reading program, kids are assessed very frequently. They get every 6 weeks on their reading, and they can use different screens for that, and they're adjusting learning. And I think the framework of the bill is to just, I don't think it doesn't matter what assessment you're doing, so I appreciate the department's flexibility. It's just the point is that you have to be doing an assessment if you're doing a structured reading program, so then you can read to or give the child the help that they need. So I'm allowing that flexibility for a screener, and it's just kind of that framework that we need to be giving feedback all the time and adjusting on instruction, because as we've been really talking about more learning, is when the kids who are coming to us are all very capable, it's just that somehow we are missing in our instruction and how we're teaching them. And so we want to make sure our instruction is helpful to all kids, because we know that they are very capable. And so what I'm looking at, and that might be the right place, but on page 30, online 15, it says if no parent or guardian attends the meeting, or any parent or guardian does not determine whether the student will progress to the next level, is preventing the nurse of the attendance does a weak sale, as it means that the student's best case interest, and whether the student's previously not progressed in the next grade, determining whether the student will progress to grade 4. And so I think about some areas, I know it's hard to follow who's not having the best internet or phones, mail. I think rural areas could be exempted at this time in May, and you can't get a hold of a parent in several areas. And so it's more about language in there. To me, that is a place where it would say, and I know I believe in our language that we have, and really what we've been working on. We have language that you continue to
that I think is one maybe. So that's one place I had a thought. I had some concerns about, I don't know much about if that's the area you were thinking of or if there were other areas. Yes, please.
Senator, you should record that. You bring up a very good point. That is the surgery that has been connecting in the case line. If you had multiple contacts, it would be this if you will, what you call to a superintendent, you should ideally be classroom teacher in the case. That is, if there is an entirely no engagement with the parent or guardian. Otherwise, I can see the concerns are handed out. I'll be open to superintendent to the chair.
Failed to do this in the intervening 2 years. They failed to show that they could, in fact,
the things that you had just described, taking and providing support, that in such a limited way, us districts continue to not let the ability to work with their own students and their own parents. And that is how we won the lawsuit, because they couldn't show it. So we showed, we won that lawsuit by showing how we feel our kids. That is precisely why we put support in this book. And so I appreciate that because, number one, we added the language on the department taking responsibility for writing those training tools in particular adults, especially if there's training tools out there in their language. There must be more than one person in the department who has an understanding and an ability to understand the things that are population. And this bill actually now, in this version, insists that must happen. The bill builds the department's report capacity, specifically looking at the law lawsuit. And because of that specific failure by the department to meet the needs of our rural students in particular, and not just our rural students, we're not meeting some language learners, needs in our urban areas either. We're failing to do that as a state. And that's why we've collaborated on trying to develop this legislation. But that's an appeal more than it is the gathering needs to be able to ask the Department to come up and give you what they are doing now and what I believe they'll be doing through this bill because of the support they're providing in the rural areas. That is the heart of the matter.
Back to the Department of Education, the Workers of Economic Development. They're the chair representatives of local schemes. There is in the bill, in the fiscal note, we have $500,000 to help for the contractor to help develop culturally responsive graders that districts can then utilize. There is no other direct support in the fiscal notes right now for curriculum development at the district level for that. Right now, districts can utilize their existing foundation funding to do that, but the only thing in the legislation is to help develop those, or in the fiscal notes for the legislation right now, is to help with this greater development in the multiple languages to help districts.
That there's a focus on culturally relevant interventions, but that's just a measurement of the state's progress, and that's not necessarily how they're engaging in learning within the classroom. And then through what they're encountering, it seems like we're addressing a problem downstream instead of the root cause by ensuring that our districts are equipped with culturally relevant curriculum and culturally. Question.
I don't know if, obviously, the supplemental materials that the department would purchase would be in response to whatever school district we are serving, whatever schools, to ensure that they are culturally relevant curriculum. That's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. What might be needed in one district is not going to be needed in another. So, assuring that those supplemental materials that we, the department, will purchase would hopefully respond to what you're asking for.
Sponsors may reduce the local control as best to some districts being able to flex their local knowledge. It seems appropriate that there should be a pipeline for the department to be able to provide resources to districts that are doing this work. Rather than the development of it or the purchasing of it, more overwhelming ones from rural school districts in particular. If there was an opportunity for them to develop their own curriculum, that was an opportunity that they would take advantage of, but there's no resources to do that. So, just a closing thought on that, I think it would be important to make sure that it's not just that intervention tools that are culturally relevant and provided in for the students, but it's also the materials that are intended to help students achieve the same way to be successful as they see themselves reflected.
And I will add to the chair that the department is already committed to developing a list of available curriculum to help districts and having that available so that they don't have to do the research and they can just say, okay, this is what's available, and then help choose off of that list so that the department can provide some of the services and alleviate that from the district level.
Can you help me?
Madam Chair, that is something that we're already having discussions about, so there are no more functions.
Madam Chair, we have a similar part, of course, the commissioner in the Department of Education have invested $2 million in, with both the Western Federation and the Executive Affairs Council in developing some of the approaches, not just in terms of curriculum, but also in terms of contacting another sustainability list. So just looking at all of these different avenues, it certainly would be consistent with this bill's in terms of the global control element that would be part of this, because it is the purchase of curriculum. Then clearly if the district is saying this is the kind of curriculum we want, the department has said if you're participating in that, that particular element of the bill will get you grant support. But certainly it would be more robust. You know, we've had that since, I think it was 2012 that we passed the Indigenous Language Protection Group in the Advisory Council that was the recommendations in terms of that. They pushed in terms of those recommendations that have been considered by the state and the legislature and the governor, frankly. Virtually all of them were not being covered. So perhaps it would be a bit more robustness. And this legislation would simply, I think, be consistent with where the legislation is.
Administrators to students and then teachers to students, and
manufacturer. That's true. This is not our pitch for the bill. You know, what you spelled out of the bill is exactly in my 25 years of teaching than what we always did. If we thought that was an option, it was always through the payment. And this bill spelled it out very clearly. But when there is no communication with the parent, who is the advocate for that kid? It falls upon the school to do that. So I think this bill is very clear. That is not a retention bill. It is a bill that gives those parents the choice to do that. And obviously, when you're working as a teacher, superintendent, whoever else, with those parents, if they decide to, it was apparent that they decided to do that in the best interest of that child. And so I see nothing in this bill that makes this a retention bill. This is an actual parent advocacy bill. It gives them the choice to do that. And in some cases, what happened in our school, it was probably needed, and it was more of a maturity, not a maturity issue, than it was a developmental issue. So I just don't feel this does anything about retention. This is about giving up parents the most choice to make in their medicine. So, just want to say.
I think that is a professional argument that is, you know, which being there, you're part of it.